So, okay, after the war, and Sarah's aunt and Sarah's uncle, let's say that aunt and uncle, they're both cousins to one another. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, in a way, Sarah's uncle is a brother of Sarah's dad. Mm-hmm. Sarah's aunt, she's a cousin to Sarah's dad.
Okay.
And she's also a sister-in-law. She's a cousin to Sarah's dad, and she's a sister-in-law because she married Sarah's brother, right? This old lady there. So through her uncle, that's when they came to Canada. So they sponsored them. They were on the farm in Wetaskiwin, and of course, when Sarah got there, they stayed with them on the farm for a while, and then Sarah got uneasy. Well, she says, how long can I stay here? I have to go to work. So then Sarah went to Edmonton looking for a job. She couldn't speak a word of English. So then she stayed at the place. I used to live in that same house. There was some German family. And she cried a lot then, you know, and prayed a lot. And the lady, one of the younger ladies that was working in Edmonton, she got to know Sarah, and then she went with her asking for a job for Sarah. And that was in a Catholic hospital.
Oh, she could speak for Sarah.
St. Joseph, yeah. It was a St. Joseph's Hospital, they used to call it. And that's when Sarah started, and she moved in, and she lived in there, too. She was at the hospital, yeah. It was some kind of an old, wasn't really a hospital, but was old folks in there, let's say the last journey.
Oh, convalescent type.
Yeah,
of care.
Some, you know, where they got in, they stayed till they died. There were some nuns and all, and I guess they had some nurses. Yeah. So she stayed there quite some time. But when she worked about 3 months, Sarah worked in the kitchen. And one day she opened the big freezer door to get something out for the kitchen, and she slammed the freezer door shut. You know, they're about that thick. A walk-in freezer, and lost her finger. She's got a chopped off finger.
Did you notice
them? Didn't notice, eh? It's one joint missing, yeah. Right there.
So she closed the door?
She closed the door, and all of a sudden she felt something hot. And then she looked, and there was the blood running, you know. She actually got a bad treatment out of that. She went across the street, and the doctor bandaged her up. The bone was sticking out, eh?
Oh, man.
Because the first joint was gone.
And pulled off the skin.
Everything was gone, yeah. Everything was smashed, yes. So they went back to the hospital, and they laid her off. Instead of sending her to the hospital and get operated, they laid her off. They sent her home. So we were already going together, so she stayed one night at my place. I went to sleep with my cousin down below, mm-hmm. with Ted. We both slept in one bed, and Sarah slept in. Martha's brother. Yeah, the one, Ted in Edmonton. So she slept in my bed, and I went to sleep with Ted's bed, and then she took the bus and went home and went to Wetaskiwin to the hospital, and they operated on her. Didn't give her any painkiller, nothing. And she drove 3 miles with the bike back to the farm after being operated, and her dad found her in the evening laying in front of the doorstep, unconscious. I guess from all that pain, yeah.
Yeah.
And so she stayed home so many months. And after she went back to the hospital again to care, you know, to continue on with her work, they knocked her down $5 on her wages. She started out as a beginner again. Yeah, and yet it has happened during the work. Eh? There was no compensation, nothing that time in the hospital.
They probably had no money.
Well, I don't know. There were 69 people employed there at that place, yeah.
It's
but like I said, they didn't carry no compensation. But anyhow, 3 years
they
later...
They probably work for no wages. It's most of it is probably all donations.
Yeah. Could be, yeah. Whatever it was, in a way.
That's
then
how they were
3 years later, well, of course, we got married in 50. This happened in 1950. In 52, we got married. And 53, I was talking on the job, you know, when I was working the office there, pipe fitting. I talked about it. And this, my superintendent says, Walter, if I were you, he says, I would sue him. He says, she should get something for that finger. Yeah. So
that's before they had we went,
the witnesses were there, the cook that was with her in the kitchen, they were still there, and the doctor testified, and everything was there. But when I started to, I went to the Board of Industrial Relations, which is the government, complained, and the Board of Industrial Relations told me, he says, well, it should have been all reported within a year. It's too late. And I said, did you tell her the laws when you brought her over? What to do and what not to do. I said, all your interest in $250. I said, and if you don't like it, pay another $250 and go back. I told the guy in the government, you know. I was mad in a way.
Yeah.
But was, and then Sarah was pregnant with Paul at the time when a court case was due to come. Yes. Well, she didn't want to go. So what happened? I ended up paying the bill 3 years later. The doctor didn't send the bill to Sarah's dad. In Wetaskiwin, the one that operated, which was $75. It was a week's wages then. So I ended up paying the bill. So it kind of was, I was a little bit. And then after that, the cook got hurt. And he sued the hospital. And he won his case. And after that, they joined compensation. After that cook's incident, then they joined the compensation.
See, they brought compensation. He knew about Sarah's case, so he knew to act on it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was there when Sarah got lost her finger. He was there. He's seen it.
They had access to doctors. You'd think they would bring a doctor over to take.
Yeah, well, they could have sent it to a lot of hospitals nearby,
yeah,
to operate properly right away instead of laying her off and saying, you go home.
That's something that has to be done right away. Like with your finger that was sewn back on.
Yeah, so.
That was all in the same day they took that, care of it.
The same half an hour, like.
Yeah.
As soon as I was cutting my lawn down below, and when it went off, I came home and I washed it off and put the towel around and jumped in the car and drove to the hospital. I didn't even have a shirt on. And then he was, looked at it and he came and he sewed it up and did, well.
Oh, so Sarah was home with the little...
Yeah, Sarah didn't come along to the hospital with me.
She had to watch all the little ones.
Yeah, my daughter-in-law came along. Paul's wife, you know, she was here at the time, and she came along. But I drove. I drove myself, you know. The same when I had the heart attack, you know. I was going to my friend's place to do some plumbing. Mm-hmm. And just about 200 yards before his house, that's when... pressure started building up, you know, and the pain.
While you were in the car?
While I was driving, yeah. And the chest, and I was sweating. Sweat was just pouring off of me. And I didn't know what
was
all about.
Serious?
Hmm?
Did you know it was serious?
No. No, I didn't. I thought, what's happening? I was never, ever sick in my life. Never, ever lay down before. So I went to this guy, and I said, he could see that I was soaking wet. And I said, well, I got something coming. I said, he says, I'll drive you to the hospital. I said, no. I said, we're going to finish the plumbing first. So it was about a half an hour's job, maybe 20 minutes. He helped me even cut the pipes, and I turned. It was a rock in the sump pump. And then I came home, drove home, which was 6 miles at least, 7 maybe. Drove home, and I said to Sarah, well, I'm going to take a shower. I said, I think I'm going to the hospital. Something is not right. So then we drove in the hospital. As soon as I got in the hospital door and I told them that I got chest pain, well, they were just around me like bees.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you know, giving me a spray. And all. And they always ask me, what does it feel from 1 to 10? Always wanted to know what that's like. Mm-hmm. I guess 10 is probably the highest pain, and whether it gets less pain, so... About 15 minutes later, the pain kind of released. So I thought, well, they're going to let me go home again, and that was it. But no way.
They kept you all night doing tests?
They kept me for 3 weeks here.
Well, they never let you go home.
Never let me go home. They said I'm a walking time bomb. So after 2 weeks, they sent me to Vancouver, and they shoved the needle in here,
mm-hmm,
and I went in the heart. Angiogram, I think they call it.
Yeah.
And it's in the picture, it shows what's blocked, eh?
Yeah.
So they said, well, at least 4 or 5 bypasses. Yeah, and then I had to wait another week. And then they flew me with the jet. I was the only passenger. Took me to Kelowna, and then by jet, and two nurses with me and the pilot. And they flew me to Vancouver and operated the same day, same night. Matter of fact, I was the 4th one that day that that doctor operated. So, and then it was 5 bypasses. Ended up with 5 bypasses. And Sarah, of course, came the next day because her sister told her, she says, no use coming the first day because she'll never be able to see me that first night because at 10 o'clock, apparently 10 o'clock I came to in the evening, you know.
So, oh, she wasn't there yet.
Yeah, and I guess, well, they made a few pictures where I'm laying with the tubes in there. And
so just the mere fact of them flying you down, didn't that just make you think, I can't believe I made it through finishing that plumbing job? Treat that time so seriously, and here you're spending a half hour on it.
Yeah,
job.
When I told them in the hospital that I finished the plumbing job first, they just shook their head.
Yeah.
They said, well, the best thing, well, if you don't never had anything before, you don't know. Yeah. But the first few minutes, it's critically when you have an attack. I mean, the first few minutes, it's very critical. The sooner they can get you in, the better chance you have. So when they operated, before they operated on me, they asked me if I would sign a piece of paper allowing them to sew my arteries together with the machine. Yeah, I didn't even know there is such thing. And I said, why? Well, he says, in your case, you got a very strong heart. Your heart isn't damaged. Usually with attack like that, the heart gets damaged. He says, your heart is not damaged at all. He says, and you've got a very strong heart. He says, and then we would like to sew your arteries together with the machine, but you have to give the consent. And I said, what's my advantage? He says, none. I said, what's my disadvantage? He says, none either. And I said, why do you want to do it? Well, he says, it operates, shortens the operation by so much, you know. So I said, okay, there must be some advantage then if it shortens the operation. Normally it takes 6 to 6 hours. In my case, it took 4 hours. So I gained 2 to 2.5 hours being under the needle, like under a knife. So everything went fine. 4 months later, the General Hospital from Vancouver phoned me back and asked if I had any relapse. And I said, no. I said, nothing. I never did have anything, no relapse whatsoever. So they were very happy that everything turned out okay. And then they told me that I was the 11th guy that they did this procedure.
Mm-hmm. Did you know you were a test, almost like a test case?
Exactly, yeah. It probably, yeah. But I don't know whether the 11th guy in Canada or 11th guy in that hospital.
Oh.
I didn't find out about that.
Do you think that's part of the reason why you are so healthy now and no relapse? Do you think that artery procedure helped?
I don't know. Maybe it did. But even when I had the attack, like I didn't know I had a heart attack. And I thought, well, I was never ever sick, never in my life. I never remembered ever laying down, even when I had a cold. I just... So everything went okay, so...
But will you have to be on medication forever?
Yeah, well, that's what I don't really like. I don't like pills.
Yeah.
I'm not a pill popper. But I got to take 5 in the morning and 4 pills at night.
Oh, so that water... Your water container comes in handy. You just go over and get...
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot.
Well, one pill is aspirin to keep the blood thin.
Yeah.
A couple of pills I have, one in the morning, one at night, which is to keep the stomach in line.
Oh.
So you don't get... The stomach gets irritated from all the pills.
So you don't have any gas.
Yeah, I never had. I never had any complaints about the stomach because I'm taking 2 a day. And then one is a Linoxin, they call it. It's probably for the heart. And then there's another capsule. I don't know what that's for. They said I got to have it too. So And then I got another one for sugar diabetes. 2.5 milligram, whatever. Just they started on at Christmas time. He says your blood count is a little out of whack. Well, Christmas time you eat a little different.
Oh yeah.
So after Christmas everything was normal again. But I said, what about the pill? Throw the pill away too now? He says, no, stay on it. He says.
Well, that's how you're able to eat apple cake and stuff.
Yeah. So even the capsule that the specialist described to me, he's a Chinese doctor. When you look at him, you think it's a boy. So he says, you don't have to see me now for 2 years. He says, you're good. And I said, well, can I throw the pill away too? He says, no.
You're trying to get out of those.
Yeah. So 3:30 is my truck ready.
Oh, so what is it now? Did you find?
Well, we found a couple other pictures. We just might take a copy at the copy store. Some pictures.
Yeah, but did you go through all of them?
No. We were busy talking.
That's not on, is it?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't think so. I don't
that
see a lighter.
Is a, your dad is a sneaky one.
There's no light or anything on it, Lauren.
There never is.
There you go, see? So Larry was asking me to fill up the gas in the little car, and then 3:30, truck is ready.
Oh, you have to fill it up?
Yeah.
This is... Oh, Lauren, do you know how to... I'm sorry, do you know how to push the buttons?
Yeah.
With the chaos, and then they had somebody that they could count on to transfer the information to.
Yeah. So anyhow, like I said, that Dad wrote from Siberia to this guy, Mom wrote from East Germany, and he sent the Mom's address to Siberia to my dad, and he told my dad not to stop in Poland, once he got released from the army, from the prison, not to stop in Poland because they already made a harness for Dad to do some plowing. The Poles had planned, to use him as a horse. To punish him, let's say. Yeah.
Even though he got out of Siberia and to punish him.
Yeah, so my dad never stopped in Poland. He just kept on going, never got off the train in Poland. Let's look at this way.
Okay,
so till he came
to
East Germany.
Didn't bother to stop and look for the family he went to.
And what the Poles did after the war, just because he was a friend with my dad or with the Germans, they put him in jail for 2 years.
The son-in-law?
The son-in-law, the Polish government. Oh. After Poland got their country back, just to... Because
he was...
he was communicating with us. In other words, just staying friends.
And see, so but when it was a Polish prison. It wasn't as bad as the German ones, so he survived. Or it wasn't
Siberia.
Well,
after the war, so he survived, In 1989, that was the first time I went back to that farm again to visit the place where I used to live during the war,
Okay.
Went to see that house. And when I got there, this couple of kids came out, the grandkids, actually. And I asked for a guy by the name Zygmunt. That was his first name, the son of that original farmer, He was already 73 then. And the kids ran back in the house and they said, there is a gentleman out there by the gate and he speaks Polish. That she meant about me.
Oh.
Speaks Polish. Because I was asking in Polish language about Zygmunt, if Zygmunt is home.
You didn't look Polish.
No, but just because I spoke Polish, they said there's a gentleman out at the gate, he speaks Polish. So then the Pole came out, and we talked about it as much as I could, explained to him that I was living in that house during the war here, and he asked me if I had a place to sleep, and I said, no. I said, I have to look for her. And he said, no. He says, you must sleep here. The joke was, when I talked to the guy outside, Sarah locked herself in the Volkswagen. We had a brand new Volkswagen. I had it rented in Frankfurt at the airport, you know. It was all arranged from Edmonton. Sarah locked herself in. She thought, well, if the Pole's going to beat me up, at least she's going to be safe for a while. So the Pole asked me to bring the car in. So I waved for Sarah to come. Sarah goes out of the car, pushes the button again, locks the door, and the ignition, the key was in the ignition. So the Pole says to me, well, drive up to the yard. And I said, I can't. He says, what do you mean? I said, I got no keys. I said, the keys are inside, locked up. It was a joke. So then, how to get into the car now, eh? But the button had a little knob on the end.
The older ones you could break into
with the wire you could hook around.
Yeah.
Anyway, I asked him for a screwdriver, I asked him for a plier and some wire. Yeah, screwdriver, a plier, and a wire. I knew how to say wire, and I knew how to say a plier, but I didn't know how to say screwdriver in Polish. So I drew it in the sand, you know. And I did like this. So he knew. He brought all that. And I, with the screwdriver, I went down above the window, and I went with the wire down, bent the hook, you know, and pulled it up. And so we got in.
Oldest way in the book, Lauren, for the older cars, you could use a coat hanger.
Yeah, it was
it or a wire.
Yeah, a coat hanger, yeah.
But now they only make cars with little sticks, so you can't do that.
You can't do that.
Oh, that's funny.
So then we went in, and of course, they made us right away something to eat. And they put even liquor on the table.
Oh.
And then I said, no, thank you. I said, I don't drink. So, and then next morning he asked me, he says, are you holy, he says, in Polish, like, you know, just because we didn't drink. And even for breakfast, they used to put a hard liquor out on the table for us to drink.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't touch it because I'm not the type, you know, so. So then we had a good visit, like I said, and then, but the same evening we went over and see the guy that used to work for us, Joe, his name was Joe in Canadian.
The dad.
Yeah. Actually, his name was Yusef, they used to call him. Eh? So I said, okay. I said, we'll have to go and see him. So we drove up, and that's when the daughter-in-law came out. His daughter-in-law, our worker's daughter-in-law came out. And I told her in Polish, I said, I am from Canada. And this guy used to work for us. I said, your father-in-law used to work for us during the war.
Oh. And she probably heard the story of who you were.
Well, I don't know whether they talked about it, but anyway, she was friendly. So she went, and it was 10 o'clock in the evening, was already in bed. So then she woke him up, and he came out, and he looked at me, and he says, that's Walter. He recognized me right then.
See, this is all tying together.
And I was 14.
From last night.
I was 14 years old when we parted. And I was in 89, well, I was 44 years went by that we didn't see each other. Still.
And he
Sarah says, I probably was so miserable, that's why he didn't forget me. Well, they were just like my chums, eh? My friends. Nice. We had another guy working for us, which was 15. This guy was 20 when he worked for us. And another younger guy, he was 15. Well, he was just like my brother. I kept writing to him. Letters, we've been writing letters back and forth, you know. And when I came back from 1989 holiday, we used to have a girl working for us, but she already had passed on. She was dead. I found out that she passed on. So anyway, these two guys, I used to send each one a 20-pound parcel. I made a 20-pound parcel ready for each guy, for this 20-year-old, which was 20 then, and the 15-year-old. And I put a suit in each parcel of mine, one of my suits. I put in one parcel a suit in, and the next parcel
a suit.
How do
you have so many suits?
I had lots, because I outgrew them.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then I waited till they answered that they got the parcels. Then I made up a 40-pound parcel for each one, with another suit in it, in each parcel. So the guy that looked after the cattle, the younger one, He wrote back and he says, well, he says, I must be an awful rich man to send him two suits.
Yeah.
Well, matter of fact, the last suit that I sent him, it cost me $800.
Yeah,
I paid $800 for that suit, and I just barely wore that suit.
And then you grew out of it.
I grew out of it, yeah, because I bought that suit for Alan's wedding.
Oh, okay.
No. So I had to pay $800 for it then. So now we kind of...
No, just a generous man.
We lost... Well, I quit riding now. We lost contact, you know.
After maybe, the visit.
Yeah. So after I've been sending those two parcels, then we kind of quit communicating. Because I always had to go and get that letter read by somebody because I couldn't read Polish, eh?
Oh, that's
I wrote in German and they went. That's when Sarah immigrated that day. She was...
It's the day she immigrated.
Yeah, she was 19 then. I teased her about the hat. I didn't like that hat when we were
nice.
Courting. I said that later on, I said they used to use that hat for bringing the chicken eggs in.
Oh.
Well, she worked on the farm there, you know, at her aunt's place. She stayed on the farm. I used to tease her all the time.
It's a nice one. Our neighbors are from Poland. And
you have neighbors from Poland?
Yeah. And they had... two children in Poland, and then they had three children here in the States.
Uh-huh.
But they go back and forth. They all speak Polish at home.
Oh, I believe that, yeah.
I think we were the only Americans invited to their daughter's. She had a graduation party. Mm-hmm. So we went there, and there's all these Poles everywhere singing these songs and eating away. And
you were lost. you were an outsider then.
Yeah, they're nice to us, though. I don't know why we got to go.
Yeah, when I visited, when I went to that house, later I found out there was a friend that he was part Polish and he turned German during the war. They took the German citizenship.
Okay.
And he went to school with me. And he only lived a few hundred yards from the police station away where I was, but I didn't know at the time.
Oh, funny.
And he was the one that was always reading the letters to them because he could read German. And when I wrote German. So he was reading, translating the letters to them.
Oh, okay.
And me and Edmonton, I used to have a friend. He just passed away now here in Vernon a few months. And he was reading them again to me. I could read some of it, but a lot of it I didn't understand no more.
Were important because you didn't have phone. Well, yeah. Letters wound up being important because there weren't as...
Yeah.
Well, you had phones then too, but I mean...
Oh, no. Well,
the other way...
That time there was no phones. We didn't even have electric light on that farm there during the war. There was no electric light.
If that's the only way of communicating, that's pretty... Oh, isn't this a funny picture, how it looks like at a height in a lot of
ways? She was 15. She was 15, Sarah.
But, Lauren, if you knew at a
height... She looks like you now.
Yeah. How neat. And I bet you she never had... I bet you none of your kids had to have braces, because they had the nice...
No, nobody had braces.
Yeah.
None of our kids had braces, no. Well,
no need.
They were, like I said, Ronnie was bow-legged, eh? And he was a real bow-legged one. You would never fall off a horse.
Oh.
So they were trying, the doctors were trying to tell us when he goes to bed, we're supposed to put some board against his feet and tie his feet up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And put pressure on, you know, let's say a board here or the bow-legged like this.
Oh, I had a niece like that. It was a metal thing.
Mm-hmm.
She'd have to put her legs in. She was like one. This is Molly, Lauren. And it was like a V-shape, a metal thing. You wrap her legs, and here you hold this little baby, and she has these metal braces. That's how she had to sleep at night.
Ah, forget it. Same with Ronnie. They asked us to do that, and I said, forget it.
Oh.
I said, I've seen a lot of bow-legged kids, and I said, later they're turned straight, and so does Ron. Ron... Straight
his
as could
pretty
be.
Yeah, his are, you wouldn't notice.
No,
know it.
No, not at all.
So his naturally straightened out.
Yeah.
Well, and he was so healthy too. Boy. Oh, I didn't know he started out bow-legged.
What I don't like, what my children kind of turned me a little bit off, that they smoke. See, they didn't learn it from Sarah. They didn't learn it from me.
It's just the product of the...
Because neither one of us ever touched something like that. And neither did we drink. And yet they smoke, except Alan. Alan is the only one that never does those things, see.
Yeah.
And Alan goes regularly to church too, and the others, they don't.
Yeah.
But Alan has a terrific voice when he sings. He sings a lot of times solos or duets or quartets. And
see, your youngest one.
Yeah, the youngest one, yeah. He's. That's why I said to Sarah, I said, that's the one you didn't want. I said, turn out to be the best. Mind you,
a lot of times you hear lots of stories with the youngest one. That's the one who wound up taking care of the parents. Or that's the one who
exactly,
was
yeah.
a big blessing.
And he is the one that wants us to come move back to Edmonton and buy a duplex, and he's going to live in half, and we're in the other half. And I said, no,
cool.
no.
Oh, all right.
I said, no, no.
Yeah, it's hard with teens. It's easy for them to get caught up in the secular world. You know, well, their environment where they're going to school,
well,
where
that's
their
true.
Friends are,
and the trouble. Let's say when we talk about something, to them it's just about impossible to believe it. They think it's all. A lot of people think it's a made up story that we're doing it. You know, that we're making,
yeah.
But it's not. It's made up. It's true. We went through all that, what we talked about.
Yeah.
There was nothing added and nothing maybe somewhat missed yet.
Yeah.
But for them it's hard to understand that there was such thing. To tell you the truth, when I didn't tell it yesterday. When I escaped, when we got from Poland into Germany and we got into the camp. And when that evening... There was a lot of potatoes left in the field yet.
Yeah.
See, the government disowned the farmers, so there was kind of communion.
Okay.
So with a lot of potatoes left and a lot of carrots, a big field of carrots. So I had my mind made up. I said, tomorrow I'm going to go and dig a lot of potatoes out. And, well, once you have potatoes, at least you can fill your belly.
You could do it in the daylight?
Yeah. So,
oh, okay.
But that same night, it was a heavy frost. So the potatoes froze.
Oh, then they get mushy.
You get mushy,
they?
You can't eat them, yeah.
Oh.
But the carrots, you can eat. Carrots, if they're frozen, they turn sweeter.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
There was maybe a little bit of hurt on top, you know, it got mushy,
yeah.
But the rest was okay, the carrots. So I used to go and pick carrots all the time
okay.
and brought them home. So
could
mom,
make a good soup out
mom
of carrots.
Mom could make a soup out of it.
Yeah.
And one day, this cousin of mine and went again with the sack. Apparently my sister was with us. I don't remember. And the ranger shot the deer. And the deer was running in the bush, and right in front of us he dropped.
Oh, right in front of you.
Yeah, he dropped. Dead. He just bled to death.
Yeah.
And I looked around. I didn't see no ranger. I didn't see anybody. And I grabbed that deer and into the sack, and away we went, back home.
Oh, boy.
Back to camp.
And he was newly enough dead where
yeah.
he was safe enough.
And just as we got to camp, I seen the ranger following the blood tracks. Eh? He came to the edge of the bush where that deer dropped.
Yeah.
And then he looked around. There was no deer and there was no blood stains anymore because I had him in the sack. So what I did, I waited till night fall. And during the night, I skinned it. And I threw the pelt. In the river. There was a river right next to the camp.
Oh.
In the water. And I thought, well, let it float away.
Mm-hmm.
Next morning we got up and the kids were playing on the yard. There was a lot of people there in that camp. The kids were dragging that pelt across the yard again.
Oh.
They fished it out.
Ooh. Was that gross?
Well, I wasn't worried about gross. I was worried about the evidence, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just in case the ranger looks for his deer, you know. Somebody's got it in camp.
But it would smell if you cooked up the deer.
No, no. I mean, with this deer was already skinned. I had the meat in the house.
Yeah.
But the fat, I mean, the hide I threw in the river.
Yeah, but if you tried cooking up the deer meat.
Oh, well, who cares about then? I mean, anything tastes then.
Oh, so, okay. He wouldn't try to find you when he smelled.
Yeah, well, I was worried in case somebody reports that there was a deer hide on the at camp. Well, he knows that somebody got the deer, right?
Oh, yeah.
So anyhow, we cooked the deer always at night.
Oh, okay.
The meat. We cooked it at night and, well, at least he had some extra food, you know.
How did you know how to prepare a deer?
Oh, well, I shot.
You learned
I butchered the first pig. I was 9 years old. I was 9 years old, I stabbed the first pig. My brother was 17, he couldn't do it.
Ooh. See, learn that survival. You know? Life.
Hello. Yes, speaking.
Did you see?
Yeah. Sorry. So how many quarters? Okay, because yesterday I didn't call you because I wasn't home.
You
and I got visitors right now from Seattle, so.
I am on there.
Yeah, yeah. Everything is okay.
After
3:30, yeah? Oh, yeah.
You had a neat.
Okay, thanks.
Lauren, I really liked your little headband. Roman must have sent you a picture of Lauren at her first communion. That's Lauren, your little friend.
The beauty queen. How come you're so good looking?
Funny.
Don't tell Mama, eh? She may get jealous. That's what I keep telling the little girls in church that.
Oh, the moms and daughters.
I said, don't tell Mom that you're good looking. I said, they may get jealous.
Oh.
Then they smile.
Yeah. It's a good thing I'm a lot older than you, so I look.
There was a couple of girls in Edmonton, and they had brown eyes.
Oh.
And when I seen them in church, and I said, oh, I said, you didn't wash your eyes again. I said, they're dark. And then they start robbing.
That's mean. Wow.
But we get along.
So where was this? This must have been at a picnic or something. And who is this, an old school?
That's in Germany. That's all Germany.
Really?
Yeah. That's Sarah's. I don't know whether there was school or church. Got no clue.
Okay. But in Germany.
That's right. That was Sarah when she was young. Well, this picture. Canadian worked with me in a power plant. And when he was in the army, Canadian army, this German soldier gave him that picture.
Oh, really?
Somehow they were friends, you know. And he thought, well, so this Canadian gave the picture to me.
Would that be an example of when you were in Germany, is that what the German soldiers look like?
Yeah. Yeah, in certain uniforms, yeah. Sometimes they had their dress uniform, then they looked different.
Sometimes they had a long coat and sometimes...
Yeah, yeah,
it
all
like
depends
that.
What they were doing, you know. You had a dress uniform and then you had the actual battle uniform.
Exactly.
Which is different, so this is... See, and when they were in battle, well, then they didn't wear hats like that. They wore helmets, eh?
Oh, yeah.
So this was in their leisure time.
So we could take a copy of this as an example.
That was their leisure time, like, you know, and
okay.
They probably exercised and whatever there.
Yeah. And this is you two?
Yeah, we were married already then.
Oh.
Yeah, that's how slim she was. Look at there. 112 pounds she weighed.
Both of you were trim.
Well, I was 185 pounds.
Really? Even
yeah,
up there?
Yeah, I'm always heavy. When I came to Canada, I was 205. Pant size 32, but the shoulders, eh?
Yeah.
I used to pack 600 pounds on my shoulder when I was 17.
Man.
So I was very, very... I don't know where I got my strength from. They said my grandfather was a very strong man.
Oh. Well, that's what helped make you survive and escape and get over
here. Yeah, possibly, yeah. So when I came to Canada, I lost 25 pounds.
You're still skinny, see your face is thin.
Yeah,
there.
The face is thin, yet I was 185 pounds, see, like a Roman is now.
That's funny. Oh, it's all in the big bones.
See, as far as the food was different than Germany. In Germany, well, you eat more meat here, more meat, more eggs, and everything better, right? But in Germany, the food is prepared better, different, more tasty.
Oh.
For as little as they have.
Yeah.
They prepare it such a way it even tastes better. Here, you just potatoes, gravy, and meat, and finished, you know? Mm. And yet, like I said, and the changeover from one variety to another, I lost 25 pounds in a short while I worked on the farm.
Oh.
Mind you, I worked harder than I did in Germany.
Even harder than in Germany.
Here, I worked harder on the farm. Well, I milked 12 cows by hand.
Oh, you're like running a farm.
Well, in a way, yeah.
In a way.
Well, that's when I got paid $1 a day. So I was milked 12 cows by hand, fed 100 hogs, 60 head of cattle, 4 horses.
Oh.
And then I was picking roots beside. You know, he was clearing land and I was...
See, that man really blew it. I don't know why he took you for granted. Like
well,
that.
A lot of things has been done like that. We were used as slave labor in a way when we came here.
You know.
Well, you had no choice. I mean, you couldn't talk back. You had no money. I had nothing.
Yeah.
I was in debt.
Took advantage of that.
I didn't have a red penny when I got here.
See
well,
if he was.
Yeah, the first $20, like I said, in Winnipeg, I got. What I did in Germany. We couldn't bring any money over. I didn't have any anyway. But the little change that I had, I took the girls while we were in camp, and we knew we were going to ship away, you know, a certain date. So the day before, I took the girls, and we went to the grocery store, to the butcher shop, and bought some sausages. Then we went to the bakery and bought some buns and butter, and the girls prepared sandwiches. The girls that were also immigrating here, which I got to know while we were in camp. You were all young, eh? So then they put the buns with the plate on the table and we all sat around and celebrated farewell. That was their last evening in Bremen, you know. And we ate everything up. So we had, when we left, when I boarded the ship, I didn't have a red penny on me. It was no good anyway. Couldn't use it, you know. So,
well,
so like I said, we threw the money on the table and I took all that money. And that's when we bought the sausage and bread and butter and made
us
made a farewell party.
Just like you can't really use the
community. And this one lady that was with us, we're still friends today. She married a guy in Edmonton, was a friend of mine. And we still communicate. Whenever I go to Edmonton, we visit them, or at least, sure, every second week we phone each other. She's 3 years older than Sarah and me. This lady, yeah, but we're still friends, still from the time. And the reason we're still friends, because when they married, and he had a appendix rupture.
Oh, appendix.
Yeah, so they had to get operated on. So he lost his job. Matter of fact, he couldn't work.
Yeah.
And she was in labor. Well, she got a little daughter was born. And they barely had money to eat.
Oh, that's sad.
Didn't have any. I wasn't even married then. I'm sorry. Yeah, they were married already. They were in Saskatchewan first. And then they came to Edmonton. I was still single. So he come and visited me one night. And I said, you need any money? I knew he had none. He says, no. He says, I can make it. The next evening he was there again. To visit me, and I said, are you in need of money? And he says, no, I think I make it, he says. The third night he was there again. Well, I didn't ask him anymore. I reached in my pocket and I gave him $150. $150 was 3 weeks' wages for me. Then, well, I didn't mind helping him out. I was still single, yeah, so. And later I heard that they had barely food on the table. And they were so glad that I helped them out.
You didn't know it was that bad.
I didn't know, no. Then I would have given him the money the first night right away. Yeah. You know, like I said, I knew her as a girl in Bremen when we made the farewell party. Mm-hmm. And later when they got married, they came to Edmonton. And
you'd be friends forever.
And the big joke was when that little baby was born, he says, I got a little daughter, but she says she looks like an ape. And if I show you, it's too bad I haven't got I have a picture someplace of her. She turned out to be a beautiful girl. And I said, they're sure good looking ape. I kept teasing her all the time.
Can you read this?
Oh yeah, that was the... We're coming and we're going. We're coming and we're going. Es kann nicht anders sein. It can't be any other way. Ob wir uns wiedersehen, das weiß nur Gott allein. If we're going to see each other again, that God only himself knows. Like we're coming and we're going. It can't be any other way. If we're going to see each other again, God only knows. Wiedersehen. Wir haben das gefunden. We have found whatever we're looking for. We have found was sich der Liebe nennt. We have found we have found what is really love, I would say. Mm. Okay. So bleiben wir verbunden, so we're going to stay united. We're going to stay together like united. Ob Meer und Land uns trennt. We're going to stay united even if ocean and land separates us. I mean, it doesn't rhyme, but it rhymes in German. Yeah?
Yeah.
Like we're coming and we're going. It can't be any other way. If we're going to see each other, God only knows. We have found what was love, was sich Liebe nennt. Yeah, we have found what we call love. So we stay united, even if ocean and land does us part. Yeah, that was the day when she...
You didn't get something as formal as this.
No, I was too. I don't even know if I had a coat.
Yeah, how did Sarah come over then?
Well, she came over with her family.
Oh, they were able to come all at once.
The whole family came together, yeah. See what happens? Sarah's uncle immigrated here in 1929. A year later, he brought his wife over. She was pregnant at the time, and she couldn't join that. They wouldn't put her on the ship, you know, because she was highly pregnant. So after the first child was born, or that particular child was born, then a year later she could come along. That was Sarah's aunt. So, okay, after the war, and Sarah's aunt and Sarah's uncle, let's say that aunt and uncle, they're both cousins to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in a way, Sarah's uncle is a brother of Sarah's dad. Mm-hmm. Sarah's aunt, she's a cousin to Sarah's dad.
Okay.
And she's also a sister-in-law. She's a cousin to Sarah's dad, and she's a sister-in-law because she married Sarah's brother. Eh? This.
Okay.
Old lady there. So through her uncle, that's when they came to Canada. So they sponsored them. They were on the farm in Wetaskiwin, and of course when Sarah got there, they stayed with them on the farm for a while. And then Sarah got uneasy. Well, she says, how long can I stay here? I have to go to work. So then Sarah went to Edmonton looking for a job. Well, she couldn't speak a word of English. So then she stayed at the place. I used to live in that same house. There was some German family. And she cried a lot then, you know, and prayed a lot. And the lady, one of the younger ladies that was working in Edmonton, she got to know Sarah, and then she went with her asking for a job for Sarah. And that was in a Catholic hospital.
Oh, she could speak for Sarah.
St. Joseph, yeah. It was a St. Joseph's Hospital, they used to call it. And that's when Sarah started, and she moved in, and she lived in there, too. She was at the hospital, yeah. It was some kind of an old, wasn't really a hospital, but was old folks in there, let's say the last journey.
Oh, convalescent type.
Yeah,
of care.
Some, you know, where they got in, they stayed till they died. They, there were some nuns and all, and I guess they had some nurses. So she stayed there quite some time. But when she worked, about 3 months, Sarah worked in the kitchen. And one day she opened the big freezer door to get something out for the kitchen. And then she slammed the freezer door shut. You know, they're about that thick. A walk-in freezer. And lost her finger. She's got a chopped off finger.
Did you notice
any? Didn't notice, eh? It's one joint missing, yeah. Right there.
So she closed the
She closed
door.
The door, and all of a sudden she felt something hot. And then she looked, and there was the blood running, you know. She actually got a bad treatment out of that. She went across the street, and the doctor bandaged her up. The bone was sticking out, eh?
Oh, man.
Because the first joint was gone.
And then pulled off the skin.
Everything was gone, yeah. Everything was smashed, yes. So they went back to the hospital, and they laid her off. Instead of sending her to the hospital and get operated, they laid her off. They sent her home. So we were already going together, so she stayed one night at my place. I went to sleep with my cousin down below, mm-hmm. with Ted. We both slept in one bed, and Sarah
Ted
slept
is,
in... Martha's brother. Yeah, yeah, the one, Ted in Edmonton. So she slept in my bed, and I went to sleep with Ted's bed, and then she took the bus and went home and went to Wetaskiwin to the hospital, and they operated on her. Didn't give her any painkiller, nothing. And she drove 3 miles with the bike back to the farm after being operated, and her dad found her in the evening laying in front of the doorstep, unconscious. I guess from all that pain, yeah.
Yeah.
And so she stayed home so many months. And after she went back to the hospital again to carry, you know, to continue on with her work, they knocked her down $5 on her wages. She started out as a beginner again.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and yet it has happened during the work. Eh? There was no compensation, nothing that time in the hospital.
They probably had no money.
Well, I don't know. There were 69 people employed there at that place, yeah.
It's
but like I said, they didn't carry no compensation. But anyhow, 3 years
they
later...
They probably work for no wages. It's most of it is probably all donations.
Yeah. Could be, yeah. Whatever it was, in a way.
That's
then
how they were.
3 years later... Well, of course, we got married in 50... This happened in 1950. In 52, we got married. And 53, I was talking on the job, you know, when I was working the office there, pipe fitting. I talked about it, and this my superintendent says, Walter, if I were you, he says, I would sue him. He says, she should get something for that finger.
Yeah.
So
that's before they
we went, the witnesses were there, the cook that was with her in the kitchen, they were still there, and the doctor testified, and everything was there. But when I went to the Board of Industrial Relations, which is the government, complained, and the Board of Industrial Relations told me, he says, well, it should have been all reported within a year. It's too late. And I said, did you tell her the laws when you brought her over? What to do and what not to do? I said, all your interest in $250. I said, and if you don't like it, pay another $250 and go back. I told the guy in the government, you know. I was mad in a way.
Yeah.
But was, and then Sarah was pregnant with Paul at the time when a court case was due to come. Yes. Well, she didn't want to go. So what happened? I ended up paying the bill 3 years later.
Yeah.
The doctor didn't send the bill to Sarah's dad in Wetaskiwin, the one that operated, which was $75. It was a week's wages then. So I ended up paying the bill. So it kind of was, I was a little bit. And then after that, the cook got hurt. And he sued the hospital. And he won his case. And after that, they joined compensation. After that cook's incident, then they joined the compensation.
See, they brought the cook compensation. Knew in. About Sarah's case, so he knew to act on it, right?
Yeah. Well, he was there when Sarah got lost her finger. He was there. He's seen it.
They had access to doctors. You'd think they would bring a doctor over to take.
Yeah. Well, they could have sent it to a lot of hospitals nearby, to operate properly right away instead of laying her off and saying you go home.
That's something that has to be done right away. Like with your finger that was sewn back on.
Yeah, so.
That was all in the same day they took that, care of it.
The same half an hour, like.
Yeah.
As soon as I was cutting my lawn down below, and when it went off, I came home and I washed it off and put the towel around and jumped in the car and drove to the hospital. I didn't even have a shirt on. And then he was, looked at it and he came and he sewed it up and did, well.
Oh, so Sarah was home with the little...
Yeah, Sarah didn't come along to the hospital with me.
She had to watch all the little ones.
Yeah, my daughter-in-law came along. Paul's wife, you know, she was here at the time, and she came along. But I drove. I drove myself, you know. The same when I had the heart attack, you know. I was going to my friend's place to do some plumbing. Mm-hmm. And just about 200 yards before his house, that's when... pressure started building up, you know, and the pain.
While you were in the car?
While I was driving, yeah. And the chest, and I was sweating. Sweat was just pouring off of me. And I didn't know what
was
all about.
Serious?
Hmm?
Did you know it was serious?
No, I didn't. I thought, what's happening? I was never, ever sick in my life. Never, ever lay down before. So I went to this guy, and I said, he could see that I was soaking wet. And I said, well, I got something coming. I said, he says, I'll drive you to the hospital. I said, no. I said, we're going to finish the plumbing first. So it was about a half an hour's job, maybe 20 minutes. He helped me even cut the pipes, and I turned. It was a rock in the sump pump. And then I came home, drove home, which was 6 miles at least, 7 maybe. Drove home, and I said to Sarah, well, I'm going to take a shower. I said, I think I'm going to the hospital. Something is not right. So then we drove in the hospital. As soon as I got in the hospital door and I told them that I got chest pain, well, they were just around me like bees.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you know, giving me a spray. And all. And they always ask me, what does it feel from 1 to 10? Always wanted to know what it's like from 1 to 10. Mm-hmm. I guess 10 is probably the highest pain, and whether it gets less pain, so... About 15 minutes later, the pain kind of released. So I thought, well, they're going to let me go home again, and that was it. But no way.
They kept you all night doing tests?
They kept me for 3 weeks here.
Well, they never let you go home.
Never let me go home. They said I'm a walking time bomb. So after 2 weeks, they sent me to Vancouver, and they shoved the needle in here,
mm-hmm.
and I went in the heart. Angiogram, I think they call it.
Yeah.
And in the picture, it shows what's blocked. Eh? So they said, well, at least 4 or 5 bypasses. Yeah, and then I had to wait another week. And then they flew me with the jet. I was the only passenger. Took me to Kelowna, and then by jet, and two nurses with me and the pilot. And they flew me to Vancouver and operated the same day, same night. Matter of fact, I was the fourth one that day that the doctor operated. So, and then it was 5 bypasses. Ended up with 5 bypasses. And Sarah, of course, came the next day because her sister told her, she said, no use coming the first day because she'll never be able to see me that first night because at 10 o'clock apparently 10 o'clock I came to in the evening, you know.
Oh, so, and she wasn't there yet.
Yeah, and I guess, well, they made a few pictures where I'm laying with the tubes in there, and
So just the mere fact of them flying you down, didn't that just make you think, I can't believe I made it through finishing that plumbing job? They treat that time so seriously, and here you're spending a half hour on it.
Yeah, when I told them in the hospital that I finished the plumbing job first, and they just shook their head.
Yeah.
They said, well, the best thing, well, if you don't never had anything before, you don't know. Yeah. But the first few minutes, it's critically when you have an attack. I mean, the first few minutes, it's very critical. The sooner they can get you in, the better chance you have. So when they operated, before they operated on me, they asked me if I would sign a piece of paper allowing them to sew my arteries together with the machine.
Oh, you didn't know that?
Yeah, I didn't even know it is such thing. And I said, why? Well, he says, in your case, you got a very strong heart. Your heart isn't damaged. Usually with attack like that, the heart gets damaged. He says, your heart is not damaged at all. He says, and you've got a very strong heart. He says, and then we would like to sew your arteries together with the machine, but you have to give the consent. And I said, what's my advantage? He says, none. I said, what's my disadvantage? He says, none either. And I said, why do you want to do it? Well, he says, it shortens the operation by so much, you know. So I said, okay, there must be some advantage then if it shortens the operation. Normally it takes 6 to 6 hours. In my case, it took 4 hours. So I gained 2 to 2.5 hours being under the needle, like under a knife. So everything went fine. 4 months later, the General Hospital from Vancouver phoned me back and asked if I had any relapse. And I said, no. I said, nothing. I never did have anything, no relapse whatsoever. So they were very happy that everything turned out okay. And then they told me that I was the 11th guy that they did this procedure.
Showing it. Did you know you were a test, almost like a test case?
Exactly, yeah. Probably, yeah. But I don't know whether the 11th guy in Canada or 11th guy in that hospital.
Oh.
I didn't find out about that.
Do you think that's part of the reason why you are so healthy now and no relapse? Do you think that artery procedure helped?
I don't know. Maybe it did. But even when I had the attack, like I didn't know I had a heart attack, and I thought, well, I was never ever sick, never in my life. I never remembered ever laying down, even when I had a cold. I just... So everything went okay, so...
But will you have to be on medication forever?
Yeah, well, that's what I don't really like. I don't like pills.
Yeah.
I'm not a pill popper. But I got to take 5 in the morning and 4 pills at night.
Oh, so that water... Your water container comes in handy. You just go over and get...
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot.
Well, one pill is aspirin to keep the blood thin.
Yeah.
A couple of pills I have, one in the morning, one at night, which is to keep the stomach in line.
Oh.
So you don't get, the stomach gets irritated from all the pills.
So you don't have any gas.
Yeah, I never had. I never had any complaints about the stomach because I'm taking 2 a day. And then one is a Linoxin, they call it. It's a probably for the heart. And then there's another capsule. I don't know what that for. They said I got to have it too. So, and then I got another one for sugar diabetes.
Oh.
2.5 milligram, whatever. Just they started on at Christmas time. He says your blood count is a little out of whack. Well, Christmas time, you eat a little different.
Oh, yeah.
So after Christmas, everything was normal again. But I said, what about the pill? Throw the pill away too now? He says, no, stay on it, he says.
Well, that's how you're able to eat apple cake and stuff.
Yeah, so even the capsule that the specialist described to me, he's a Chinese doctor. When you look at him, you think it's a boy. So he says, you don't have to see me now for 2 years. He says, you're good. And I said, well, can I throw the pill away too? He says, no.
You're trying to get out of those.
Yeah. So 3:30 is my truck ready.
Oh, so what is it now? Did you find?
Well, we found a couple other pictures. We just might take a copy at the copy store. some pictures.
Yeah, but did you go through all of them?
No. We were busy talking.
We went through all these.
That's not on, is it?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't think so. I don't see a lighter.
Your dad is a sneaky one.
There's no light or anything on it, Lauren.
There never is.
There you go, see? So Larry was asking me to fill up the gas in the little car, and then 3:30, truck is ready.
Oh, you have to fill it up?
Yeah.
This is...
Oh, Lauren, do you know how to... I'm sorry, do you know how to push the buttons?